The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hi, folks. This is Bob Main. This is today's Survival Show, episode number 60. Thanks for tuning in. Our goal is to help you harness the power of choice to live life on your own terms. And we're a practical show. As you've known from listening to me before, I try to keep this low-key, not a lot of tinfoil hat stuff and paranoia, and got a special guest today. We're going to talk about functional fitness, but before I get into that, I want to let you know that if you're tuning into this for the first time or you're kind of new to listening to today's Survival Show, I want to welcome you. Thank you very much. The listener count continues to grow, and to all of you who have been with me a long time, I want to extend a big thank you to you as well. This is going to be a special program. As you know, I've been interviewing folks from our forum. And I got another one waiting on the line by phone from the state of Maryland. And we're going to talk about some functional fitness. Fitness seems to be a topic that doesn't get discussed a lot in the survival community. I really don't know why. Because if something happens and you're not prepared for it physically, you could also be in a world of hurt. And I'm going to let our guest talk a little bit more about that. And before I bring him on, first of all, I want to let you know that this gentleman is a lieutenant commander in the United States Navy. And if I get something wrong here, I'm sure he'll correct me. But I want to thank him very much for his service to our country. And it's an honor to have him on our forum and what he offers. And you know, he's going to talk to us about functional fitness. Now, I know maybe some of you listening to this show have worked out before, and maybe getting fit is one of your survival goals. You've heard me talk about my workout program, which is nothing like what Mr. Baker does, and I'm going to bring him on in a second. I was able to lose over 30 pounds, and I did it in about a year and a half just by going to the gym and being consistent with it, and it has paid off greatly. But there's a difference between going and working out and what's called functional fitness. So without any more fanfare, and so you don't have to listen to me continue to talk, I'm going to go ahead and bring on Spencer Baker from our forum. Are you there, Spencer?
Yeah, I'm here, Bob. Yep.
All right. Welcome to today's Survival Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. And let me go ahead and start the interview by asking you to just define what functional fitness is.
Okay. Let me throw a quick disclaimer just for the sake of clearing the air. I'm not a certified fitness instructor or personal trainer. I'm not a medical professional, a successful athlete, or a competitive bodybuilder. I'm almost 40. I'm a father of five, and I'm a regular active duty officer in the Navy. When we talk about functional fitness, to me, what we're talking about, functional and practical being synonymous, exactly aligned with the theme of the show. Practical fitness, useful things, not extreme, not bodybuilding and steroids, not necessarily finishing an event in the top 1%, but aspects of a healthy lifestyle that are relatively easy, inexpensive to apply, and will serve you in the physical activity that you conduct normally, not to create a different set of circumstances for you that you have to try to integrate into a normal life.
I like that. I like the fact that you say it's, first of all, practical, and it integrates into our normal lifestyle.
Yeah, and it fits with what you can with what you have, where you are right now, and that's certainly a principle that applies.
So. Hey, where have I heard that before? So that's your definition of functional fitness. That's good. And so give us an idea of people that are listening to this show, tell us a little bit about your workout and how it could help people who are of the preparedness mentality.
Okay. Well, talking about it specifically from a preparedness perspective, let me kind of say the opposite of functional fitness first.
Okay.
Lifestyle-related chronic diseases are a genuine threat to your survival.
Mm-hmm.
heart disease is the number one killer of Americans.
Yes, it
is. Not zombies, not communists, not home invaders, carjackers, liberals. it's lifestyle choices.
Not zombies. Uh-oh, I'm disappointed.
Certainly there are folks who have chronic diseases who contribute nothing to it, and we recognize that that distinction is there. But there are a huge number of us who just don't get around to taking care of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and we become victims of our lack of help, and that's no way to be. And so, in keeping with survival, recognize that this threat is real. It's proximate. You know, it's persistent.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost inevitable if you ignore lifestyle contributions to your fitness. And it really will threaten your survival. So if you can imagine in a disaster situation,
yeah.
if you need extra treatment, specialized care, certain kinds of medications that you're only allowed to have a finite prescription for, special materials that have to be delivered frequently, or medical appointments, you could be in big trouble. So the best way to combat these lifestyle-related issues is to take them one step at a time, one day at a time, one small bite, and try to make it fun. So.
Yeah, and if it's not fun, people are not going to do it.
Absolutely. Persistence is the most important factor out of anything else you could say. And that being said, I also want to illustrate that what works for me is
yes.
not necessarily perfect for everybody. It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll talk specifically about programs and maybe designing one that can integrate well into your normal life, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that. I just want to interject something before you do that. You said something good, and you said something I like. You know, you said this is not one size fits all. It may not fit everybody. And people have heard me on this show mention a lot, take the best and leave the rest. My mentor taught me that. So, you know, what you're going to hear, just take what works for you and get fit. And, you know, I want you to identify what it is that your daily workout is. Before I do that, if I can take a back step, though. You're a lieutenant commander in the Navy, right?
Yes, sir.
Did you get some of this training in the Navy, or is this something that you've gone out on your own and found?
Regrettably, the kinds of things that happened in the Navy when I first enlisted and up until very recently when the Navy had a ground presence in Afghanistan and Iraq, which is, as you can imagine, somewhat unusual for your regular gray ship, black submarine, traditional Navy types. Obviously,
right.
special warfare is on the ground anytime we have that. But this is a recent development, and where I kind of went in this direction, frankly, was from my younger days not being an athlete of any kind. Well, unless you count skateboarding and frisbee. So this was kind of a self-development thing, kind of reparenting myself, and it aligned well with what I do in the Navy because I am allowed to and incur. Definitely not something that was handed to me in a pamphlet form in boot camp. And though there are some great programs out there, the Navy, even in its best state, is still somewhat of a bureaucracy. And we try to do
yeah.
a lot of one-size-fits-all scenarios. And so I'm not at odds with anything that the Navy has afforded me with, but I just have a little different spin on it that I think, again, kind of layers over a normal person's life a little better.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, we're probably all sitting here wondering, all right, tell us what it is. So go ahead and explain to us a little bit about your daily routine.
Okay. Well, if for me, I get pretty bored really quickly with routine business. And
mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, I've got a couple of submarine tours. There's only so many things you can put on a submarine that will fit that you can use for fitness. So creativity is huge.
I would imagine you're right,
so
yeah.
What you end up with is recognizing that your body weight is a unit of output, just like putting pins in a stack of weights on a piece of Nautilus equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Your body weight, whether you're measuring it with push-ups or pull-ups or squats, lunges, whether you're walking, running, climbing, your body weight is naturally resisting gravity all the time. So in a lot of ways, you can focus around that principle. The other one is that, unlike a bodybuilder, and again, this is not for competitive athletes. If you are a triathlete, a competitive bodybuilder, a mixed martial artist, specialization is key to your success. But if you're just a regular bubba going through the motions of a normal life, family, and work, then specialization is probably not the key. So diversity, variety is everything to me, and it also leads to my ability to keep doing it. So this is probably going to sound crazy, but it's as if I took a list or a piece of paper and made three columns, and they would be things that are fun that I like to do, things that I get a kick out of. And so maybe that's for me, cycling. I like, whether it's mountain biking or road cycling, I like to do that. So if I were to start with that perspective, I would put that down.
Okay.
If you like yoga, or if you like going for walks with the dog, if you like to swim at the YMCA or in the ocean, if you just enjoy barbell training or Nautilus equipment or hitting a heavy bag in the basement, then that's a good list to start with.
Another, you mean starting with the fun part, right?
Right. Start with the fun part.
Okay.
Second would be things that are just easy, that you have easy access to. For example, if you have a beach cruiser in your garage with flat tires, pump it up, and that's a piece of fitness equipment. It's not cutting edge. It's not titanium or carbon fiber, but it's easy.
That's good.
Walking around the block is easy. You don't need equipment. Shoot, you can do that barefooted. If there's a school nearby that has a track or that has some grass where you and the dog can chase the frisbee together, if you can play tennis easily because you live next to a tennis court, or if you can jump rope in the driveway, those things are not equipment intensive.
Mm-hmm.
You can go right back to grilling steaks. You can go right back to changing the oil in your car. You didn't create some sort of scenario that's hard to walk away from.
Yeah, and you know what I like about what you just said? Everything you just mentioned is low cost.
Absolutely, yeah. Going into debt for fitness equipment is just as bad as doing it for guns or anything else.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I may take exception to that. No, I'm just kidding.
And then the last thing would be things that you would just like to try. Maybe things that you don't even recognize as fitness things, but that just seem exciting, like canoeing, kayaking, a kickboxing class that maybe you've seen advertised in your neighborhood. Maybe you haven't tried cycling, but it seems like a neat thing. Triathlon is a sport that's grown phenomenally over the last few years, partially because of advertising. If you see kettlebells on the internet or on late night television, you know somebody who has a black belt in karate and that seems exciting, or somebody you know is recovering for breast cancer, so you see that there's a charity walk in the area. Rock climbing. These are things that, frankly, there's a lot of people who've never tried. There are lots of things that people never try.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just say that if you can have the approach to this group of activities like a kid in PE class or recess, it's okay to be a beginner forever. Because you go canoeing this Saturday doesn't mean that your next step is to buy one.
Ooh, I like what you just said.
You just went canoeing. Or the day after that, somebody said, hey, me and Jimmy are going to walk to raise money for muscular dystrophy. It doesn't mean you're a walker, but necessarily. You didn't just become part of a group. You just had an activity.
Yeah, I like what you just said. Okay to be a beginner forever. Never heard it put that way. I like that.
Yeah, I consider myself a perpetual beginner. I have a white belt in about 75 things, you know, and no real deep development in any one of them. But you can imagine that if you were to fill out a calendar, say a month-long calendar from your contacts management, your email program, or just on a cocktail napkin, if you could populate that calendar with these kinds of things,
mm-hmm.
Again, it's not to say that the treadmill, the elliptical machine, the Nautilus equipment, that's part of the list too, but that can get very routine, and it can get to be where people fall out of love with physical activity because they're indoors. They're surrounded by mirrors that maybe remind them of something that they're not flattered by. You know, they're seeing somebody in the mirror that doesn't look like the 22-year-old guy that they remember or gal that they remember. The equipment industry is designed to make money. So what is packaged well is not necessarily what works well, and that's one of the reasons I use the walking barefoot or beach cruiser thing. You do not need to go buy everything that is the newest, most neon and exciting product out there.
Right.
I think that, you know, one of the things that ancient times when people had to work just to exist, that people would say that it's a Buddhist saying that before enlightenment, you chop wood and you carry water. Those are aspects of your life that are necessary and present. And after you're enlightened, you still chop wood and carry water.
And carry water,
so
yeah.
If you can work on things that you enjoy and have them be part of your life, to me that's easier than writing a schedule that is hard to remember or difficult to commit yourself to or makes you leave the environment that you kind of need to be in as a parent or as an employee. Specialty clothing, you know, can intimidate people because nobody wants, especially if somebody's on the heavy side, the idea that they want to go get some form-fitting clothing and bright-colored running shoes, they may be real self-conscious about that.
True.
So be less radical and more consistent with things that you enjoy, and I think those baby steps are probably more important than any one tool or philosophy or book or download. But if you can make it like recess, and less like pain, I think there's some real opportunities there.
That's a great point. Let me put an exclamation point on something you said just a couple of minutes ago, and that is it's easy to fall out of love with the physical activity. You know, that was me. A lot of folks probably do what I did and went and signed up for a gym membership, and I got a personal trainer and everything. And I stuck with it for a year and 9 months. He was impressed that I stuck with it even that long. He said some people are in and out of here in 90 days and never come back. They get bored with it. And I like what you say about make it like recess. If we all think back to when we were kids, we loved recess and we looked forward to it, didn't we?
It's still my favorite subject.
Did you get an A in recess?
I don't think I got any A's, but that would have been a good candidate for that one, I think.
Well, I love your philosophy. Keep going. This is good stuff.
Okay. So just to give you an example of what my week is like this week, and again, this is not by any stretch to suggest that this is where anybody needs to be, anybody ought to be, that this is the specific position of the Navy on any of this perspective. Mm-hmm. I discovered a guy in Rhode Island who had had cancer and back surgery in the same year, and he was a kettlebell instructor. And his background was he had been trained in Fit for Life and some of these other total body systems. But after suffering through those two circumstances, fitness became academic only. He had hospital time to read about fitness. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he came up with was at the turn of the century, we had all these strongmen that you've seen pictures of with handlebar mustaches and out on Muscle Beach with no shirt on, lifting their girlfriend over their head.
Yeah.
And before competitive bodybuilding, which was primarily an aesthetic pursuit, as opposed to powerlifting, which is truly just as much bulk as you can lift off of the floor, bodybuilding became the measure of fitness, and it's really still stuck with us, thanks to really great athletes like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It became so desirable to be symmetrical, to be attractive. You see guys lifting their shirts up and looking in the mirror like never before because they want a six-pack set of abs.
No kidding. Isn't that the truth?
But so these kettlebells are not a new principle or a new concept. And the only reason that I make the distinction rather than just saying a weight or a dumbbell is the handle puts it in a position where whether it's swinging it or getting underneath the weight, which is kind of a different way of thinking about it than just lifting it, you because it's only one side, everything you're doing is also a core and stability exercise. Anything that's asymmetrical requires your left glute and your left lat and the opposite side to compensate. Anything asymmetrical is by definition a core workout. Mm-hmm. But if you're laying on the ground, just moving your head, your chin towards your navel, that is an abdominal exercise, but it is not really a true stability exercise. It's an aesthetic exercise. It'll give you what you want in the mirror, but it may not sustain your lower back, which has to endure 10 hours of office work at a time. Or if you're a technician, leaning under the hood of a car, doing crunches on the floor at Bally's when you get off of work, is just not going to be the same.
Or if you're like me, I spend about 20 hours a week driving in my vehicle.
And that's got to be tough on your body. But so the principles that I get from kettlebells are just that the very, very fundamentals of push, pull, lift, carry, climb, walk, I integrate those with kettlebell swings and, they're overhead presses just like you would expect with a barbell or a piece of Nautilus equipment, because it's only one side at a time. Again, you're standing up, so your legs are involved. Mm-hmm. It's not like a piece of Nautilus equipment where every muscle except your bicep is actually at rest while you're doing curls, or every muscle but your tricep while you're doing extensions. The whole idea is that if you can turn every rep of every set into a whole body exercise, then you're bringing in muscle fiber, you're bringing in organs and tissues and joints that have been at rest in a lot of cases while you've been doing isolated bodybuilding style exercises.
Now tell me something. Isn't that going to start to hurt at first?
I would definitely recommend that. And it's one of the reasons I brought the body weight thing up. The set I did today, for example, was a bottom-up body weight style workout. And even somebody's body weight is going to be more than enough to get them from – and again, this is assuming we're talking about beginners, or this is assuming we're talking about folks who are maybe off the path a little bit and want to come back into the world of kind of fitness survival. Mm-hmm. That if you are, even if you just spread your ankles, your heels underneath you and squat, all the way to the bottom of that range of motion and come back up, I can promise you, if you haven't done that in a while, you'll be sore even with just a few of those.
Well, can I inject a quick testimonial?
Sure.
You are exactly right, Spencer. When I started my workout, I paid a lot of money for a personal trainer, and he started me out just doing things like squats and other core exercises with no weights at all. And I actually got a little irritated. He made me do that for about the first 3 weeks, and I started getting a little bit testy with him because I didn't think that that's what I paid my money for. Right. And looking back on that, he was so right. That was such an important – just using my body weight was so important for me to master at first.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to it, and the reason – this is going to sound so obvious, but I promise it underlines all of the magazine sales and everything else. The reason that aspect of fitness is undersold is because you can't market something everybody already has. I can't sell you your body weight in a package for $19.95 on late night television. So if we let the world go think that they can exercise in their basement with no equipment, oh my goodness, we're going to crash that portion of the economy. The reality is push-ups don't seem like the kind of exercise that anybody would brag about. But just like bench press or an overhead press with some equipment, most people can do far fewer push-ups than they really think until you have them do it. And if they're putting one hand on a stack of four or five books so that you can, again, make it asymmetrical, or if you have one hand that's maybe a foot in front of your shoulder and the other one is more back towards your hip, so that push-up causes your body to twist as you go down and come back up, There is so much there that doesn't cost you a dime, and people have been putting this stuff on the internet for free, and there's some opportunity to get the kind of fitness that your body needs anyway, because pushing yourself up off of the floor, mm-hmm. getting up from a seated position up off the floor, mm-hmm. carrying groceries in and out of your car, where you may also have to ascend a set of stairs that's comparable to doing a lunge or a squat. These are not things that when you do them, they're preparing you for an Olympic event that's never going to happen. This is
right.
routine stuff that you interface with every day.
Hence the name functional fitness.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because it is low cost. And, you know, I still do this when I'm on the road. I still do a lot of the exercises just with my own body that my trainer taught me a few years ago. I do them in hotel rooms.
That's a good way to keep yourself, get your daily dose.
No, let's get back to kettlebells. So, okay. So the kettlebells, you sell those?
I don't. No,
okay.
I buy them retail just like everybody else. I don't have a discount or even a specific site that I look to. But you know, with a cannonball with a handle, you wouldn't think there's a lot that can go wrong. But I've bought a few of them that were poorly made,
mm-hmm.
and fell apart. And they do sell them even at some of your big box stores like Target, but they typically don't go up to the range that you would want to buy if you're going to go ahead and spend the money. Shipping can be prohibitive, of course, because they're, you know, if you're buying something that weighs 35 pounds,
mm-hmm.
the UPS guy had to carry that around, you know, for a few days to get it to you. But I have typically just bought them off of eBay or at sporting goods stores. And what's recommended if you're going from a modestly athletic perspective,
mm-hmm.
and you were to want to go pick up a kettlebell, what's recommended is the metric one that would be the equivalent of about 35 pounds.
Okay, I'm
they're typically
notes.
Labeled in metric because they try to sustain the lore and the history of you know, being a Russian tool.
Okay, I'm taking notes. So the metric one, approximately 35 pounds,
yeah,
the one that's equivalent to 35
pounds.
And that's
the 16 kilos.
16 kilos,
that's
yeah.
where it's recommended for a regular size adult male who's in pretty good condition. That's the place to start. And then the one increment down for maybe not quite as fit or a fit woman just with a smaller frame would typically be 12, and that's about a 25 pound one.
Okay.
So whether you have to go with metric or pounds, obviously it's the same amount of gravity pulling on that darn thing. But that's a starting point.
Okay.
And I have posted it in the past on the forum, but I'll make another entry that there are free materials out there so that nobody has to be so ambitious as to go buy the newest, most glittery program available on late night television.
Right.
A couple of one-page, two-page documents that say, okay, this is the safe way to get this thing off the ground. This is the safe way to get this up to your hip. From your hip, you obviously can get it up more towards your shoulder. I mean, this is kind of a natural progression of whether you were picking up groceries and putting them on a high shelf in your house.
Mm-hmm.
This is exercise that just makes sense for your body to want to do, and that is to take things from the ground and carry them close to your body, which, again, if it's only one side, it's asymmetrical, so your butt and your hips and your chest and core have to squeeze and hold it, and then to get things overhead safely. And to keep your shoulder tucked down into your body rather than trying to extend it, which sometimes Nautilus equipment or cable type equipment can allow you to do motions that are unnatural because you're resisting things that are coming from strange angles or because the rest of your body is at rest. So those two weights,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of little free documents off the internet can certainly get people through the fundamentals.
Okay, can I stop you there for a minute?
Sure.
Please go ahead and post that to the forum, because I'm sure everybody's going to be wondering about how do I get started with kettlebells. And for those of you who are listening, you know, you can check out our forum even if you're not a member. I would strongly suggest that you become a member. But, yeah, if you'd post that, because a lot of folks are going to wonder how do I get started. And I think you've got a blog about this too, don't you?
Yeah, I do maintain a blog that's not an official Navy blog, but the title sounds pretty official.
Yeah.
And that's just for people I work with and for people I've been on ships with and at other commands. And it's just a www.usnavyfitness.blogspot.com. And that's sometimes I make daily entries about what me and the folks here locally are going to be doing at the gym.
Okay.
Or I'll just find things on the internet that make sense for me to want to share with the officers and enlisted guys that I work with, things that they might need to know that aren't Navy specific. I mean, we obviously don't have a copyright on any particular fitness technique outside of special warfare.
usnavyfitness.blogspot.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is good stuff. We got about another 10 minutes before we go into some more of it. I just want to accentuate a couple of things you said, because I like the part about doing the exercises and keeping doing, you know, using proper form, keeping your shoulders in, tucked to your body, for example.
Right.
You know, that's important. If anybody's listening to this that has had any kind of surgeries, that's very important. I recently had rotator cuff surgery a little less than 2 years ago. And my workouts had to completely change after I had rotator cuff repair.
Oh,
you know, if I'm not careful, if I have what's called flying elbow, if I start letting that elbow get too far away from my body, if I don't keep it tucked in, I'm going to be back in the surgical table again with more tears in my rotator cuff. But I can still work out. And I would imagine with the kettlebells, it's still important to use that proper form, right?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, there's no less danger with picking up a kettlebell with a whole lot of enthusiasm and not a lot of sense. It'll get you down the same path that throwing barbells around or dumbbells or even just equipment around your house. You know, move yourself onto the U-Haul van without squatting and picking that box up, and you could find yourself on the surgical table.
And you also posted some YouTube videos on working out with kettlebells. I watched a few of them.
Yeah, there's plenty of that out there, and again, because I don't subscribe to anybody else's system, and because there's no one way that I think defines it exactly for everybody, I really do use the internet as my primary resource.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because it's free, it certainly allows me to keep more dollars in my pocket.
Sure.
But also because it certainly takes some filtering. Because you can find some garbage out there, but whether it's body weight exercises, I just recently stumbled across a site where somebody was working through a martial artists program where the only two real exercises are push-ups, but a bunch of different varieties of push-ups, including overhead handstand push-ups and squats. But the squats go all the way into the possibilities of squats just on one leg all the way to the bottom while balancing.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think, okay, well, that's great for that one leg getting all the exercise. Well, until you were doing it, you wouldn't realize that other leg that's held out straight or cocked back behind you, the fact that you're holding that hip steady and in place to keep you from falling over, you know, your balance is your body fighting gravity in more than one direction. And so there's a workout in all these places that okay, a one-legged squat just sounds like your left leg got a whole lot of work and the other one relaxed, when in reality, I wouldn't pay $39 for a book that said, hey, do one-legged squats. but to find a short article of somebody's journey, you know, their own fitness journey, or one of the first things I stumbled across that was a multimedia thing was a triathlete's journey to Ironman, which is you know, the world class event that would take a normal person an entire day to complete, a swim, a bike, and a run. And this was a mother in the Chicago school system. She was a teacher who, through the course of about 2 years, went from, you know, couch potato to Ironman triathlete.
Wow!
And that doesn't happen by accident. So
no.
Kettlebells aside and magic tricky formulas aside, the persistence and dedication to coming up with something that you will do, that the goal is big enough and exciting enough to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But let me also say again, I'm not particularly proficient at any sport. I don't finish in the top 10% of anything I do, I'm sure. But my idea, because I have a large family, is also that, you know, I'm in a marathon that's upwards of 90 years, hopefully, not in a sprint.
Ah, I like that. I like that. I buy into that philosophy, and I don't even finish in the top. I'm probably in the lower 5% of all the sports out there. Let's put it that way. And I'm a little older than you are. I'm 48, but still not too old to keep the shape going. And this is good stuff, Spencer. Wasn't there also a gentleman who actually has a major website? I forgot his name, but isn't he kind of like someone that inspired you to get the kettlebells or something like that?
Well, the guy I was talking about who had the surgery has a site called Art of Strength, and
okay.
he also runs a kettlebell gym in Providence and in I want to say Newport, Rhode Island. His name is Anthony DeLulio, and again, this is a guy who had been at the top of his game in a few sports and been a personal trainer, but then, you know, both cancer and he's actually had a second back surgery since then.
Wow.
He was forced to come to grips with training techniques that were originally designed for rehabilitation. And something that he stumbled across was, if this works for rehabilitation, then why the heck would you want to injure yourself in the first place? I'll develop a system around the rehab rather than create a system that destroys your joints or your muscles or your tendons and then have to spend a fortune at the physical therapist getting repaired. He went at it from the other perspective. And though there are professional athletes who get great workouts from following some of Anthony's materials, it's also, he has programs to get obesity under control in the school system where he is, where he has some heavy-duty ropes that almost look like something you'd tie up a yacht with, having the kids swinging ropes around. Doing body weight exercises like planks and push-ups. Again, not to complicate it for them, but to make it so that that rehab and self-sustainment and exercise and fun are all the same program, rather than having to find four places on your calendar in a week to have your physical therapist visit, to have your exercise and your rest and your playtime. If your work and your play can be synonymous, then you know, you've kind of mastered life.
That's perfect. Does he have a website?
He does. It's artofstrength.com, just all the words strung together.
Artofstrength.com.
And there's as a resource for kettlebells, there's no place where you can find more detailed instructions on safely picking one of those things up off the ground and then getting sweaty.
There's no place you can find that?
Well, there's no place quite as extensive as Art of Strength.
Oh, okay. Nothing quite as extensive as Art of Strength.
He didn't invent this system. He doesn't claim to be the messiah. He's just a guy who's found some real good ways to apply this for himself and for some people he works with.
As we've been talking, I just bookmarked that on my web browser, so I'm going to be referring back to that. This is good stuff. This is really good stuff. You know, in summary, this is excellent. I like the fact that you've talked about what people can do that doesn't cost a lot of money.
Yep.
And it also doesn't take a whole lot of time. Like, for example, we don't have to go drive somewhere like I do. I have to go drive to the gym, you know, or I would have to go drive to some kind of an appointment with a physical therapist or something like that. Some of us just don't have that kind of time.
Yeah, I agree with you. And frankly, I drive a minivan because I have a lot of children. And if you saw the back of my minivan, you could see that part of my workout routine is I only do things that are portable. And so if I can take it outside with me, and that's, again, one of the great things about a kettlebell is the 35-pound one. For me, I have a few of them that I carry with me because I like to help out the people I work out with too. But to be able, on a spring day, for example, to be able to be in the grass instead of surrounded by mirrors and people in Lycra, is just a different fitness experience than feeling like you need to show up at the gym at a certain time, do X number of reps of this type of thing, and then move on to the next machine. And portability and it's practical. And again, we're not talking about setting yourself back. You can go to Lowe's and get a duffel bag and some clay sand, 50 pounds of that, and be lifting that thing off the ground, you know, in a squat motion. And it has the same workout capacity as a dumbbell that you'd get at a sporting goods store. So.
Boy, that's a good idea. You know, 24-hour fitness is going to hate you now because I'm going to go in there this week and I'm going to cancel my monthly membership. And in the little box where it says, why are you canceling your membership, I'm just going to write Spencer Baker and let them figure it out.
Just put Lowe's.
I'll put down Spencer Baker and Lowe's and kettlebells, and we'll kind of see what they think of that. But this is great.
Even 24-hour fitness and Bally's and places like that, as long as they have something there that you enjoy, then by all means, that can be a great aspect of your program. But my personal history on that is that if I book myself on paper to be in the gym with a list of equipment and I have to write down a bunch of notes and I move the plate from 135 to 145, and if I miss a day, I've blown it. That there's more anxiety and frustration to that, and like I said, I tend to fall out of love with programs like that, and I find it real easy to get up in the morning and go for a walk. That's not something that is hard to get. It's not hard to get in motion when what you're getting ready to go do is either fun or sort of easy.
Before we wrap this show up, I use an exercise ball as well, a big green, I don't know what it's made of, plastic or something like
one
that.
One of the hollow ones, like a beach ball, right?
A hollow one, looks like a beach ball, yeah, and there is a ton of exercises, and I actually found on the internet some exercises I can do just with a simple exercise ball that cost me $19, I think, at Academy Sports and Outdoors or something like that. How do you feel about that?
We have one of those in our basement, and I have I have a pretty extensive set of stuff, but we're still talking about everything I have combined is probably a third of a piece of Nautilus equipment or a treadmill in terms of cost. But the Swiss ball is great. We have one that I think has about 2 pounds of sand at the bottom, but it's just to keep it stable. It's not to make it heavy.
Swiss ball,
you're going overhead with that or side to side and twisting motions or laying over it to give you an angle that would better serve your core. It's definitely one of the many tools that if you get a kick out of it, if you're willing to do it a couple of times or consistently, like I said, we have one of those, a few medicine balls, which are, you know, just the heavier things that you would typically see basketball players passing back and forth and track and field athletes twisting and turning and few jump boxes, just wooden things that you can jump up onto and then step back off of.
Like a stair, sort of?
More or less like a stair stepper.
Yeah.
I have one that's pretty tall because, to get your heart rate up to where I need it to be during a circuit, you know, I want to jump up pretty high. Some of this stuff's been on a lot of these fitness TV shows lately, Biggest Loser. They have some people doing some pretty outlandish stuff because that's what makes for good TV, I guess.
It sells.
The old 15-pound hard rubber medicine balls, the gymnast rings, the little plastic rings that you'll see folks balancing themselves on. You can imagine that if you have those things suspended from the ceiling and let's say they're a foot and a half off the ground, doing a push-up on something that's unstable because it's suspended from a rope, you'll get those kind of wiggles that people used to get when they would do pull-ups on the playground as a kid, where you try to hold yourself in a pull-up position, your whole body shakes.
I remember that.
And again, if your body's shaking, it's because it's trying to find some stability, and your core is trying to get control of all of those of all of your hands, your arms.
And that's good for you. That's good for you.
It's good for you. It feels strange, and that's another one of those things that if I was going to have a blog entry, the headline would be, if you look ridiculous doing it, and if you're really almost embarrassed for people to watch, then it's probably a good one. The motions that people feel perfectly comfortable doing in front of other people, they're very stable, their heart rate's probably down, they move from one machine to another in kind of a calm fashion. But if you're drooling on yourself out in the sunshine and you're working hard enough to, and you got grass on your back and, you know, maybe snot coming out of your nose because the weather's so cold, It's not that you want the intensity to be ridiculous. It's just that sometimes the exercises are not designed to be pretty. They're designed to be effective.
I'm trying to picture that right now.
Well, I can tell you, when I walk back into the office building to shower, and we've been out there doing some ridiculous-looking stuff like that, it's worth a giggle from the folks who work at the front door to see, you know, grown-up, relatively decent professionals covered in gravel and sweat. So.
Well, but you're so right. If it looks bad, then it's probably good for you. That's true. Thanks a lot. I think we're just about out of time.
Okay.
And Spencer, this has been fantastic. This is why I love these interviews, because I just learned so much, and everybody's got some type of expertise, and we have a lot of members on our forum, and I know you folks out there have a certain amount of expertise. So anytime you want to come on the show, just send me an email. And, you know, Spencer, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate your time. I know it's valuable.
Oh, it's honestly a pleasure. I've gotten so much out of the podcast already, Bob, and the website and the forum. It's given me an opportunity to rethink some of my aspects of survival and kind of family readiness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fair trade. You've done a great job.
Well, thank you very much, Lieutenant Commander Spencer Baker, United States Navy. I very much appreciate you joining us. And once again, thanks so much for your service to our country. It means a lot.
My pleasure, Bob.
It means a lot. Thanks for coming on to the show. Folks, I want to close saying thank you for listening to this episode of today's Survival Show. And as Teddy Roosevelt once said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. And again, thanks for coming on the show, Spencer. And to all of you, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Shotgun, a rifle, and
bye, everyone.
A four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't.